Earlier this month, WPR News reporter Bridget Bowden joined us to tell us about a new series she's working on. Bridget is spending the next few months embedded with the newest class of recruits at the Madison Police Training Academy. In her most recent installment for that series, she followed the newest class on their first day at the academy and through some of their physical fitness tests. Here's her report.
It's a few minutes before 8 a.m. on the first day of the Madison Police Department Training Academy. 23 new recruits are sitting at desks dressed in suits and ties. They're greeted by Lieutenant Marianne Flynn Stotts, who runs the academy day to day. She welcomes them and then gets serious.
As you know, you're coming into a profession that is under fire like it never has been at any other time. And here at Madison, we're incredibly proud of how we train.
It's a big day for the recruits, so it's clear they're nervous. After a short orientation, they take an oath in front of the mayor, their families, other officers, community leaders, and the chief of police.
And the charter of the city of Madison.
And the charter of the city of Madison.
On day two, that nervousness has mostly gone away.
You got it?
The recruits take a fitness test that includes a mile and a half run, a sprint, push-ups, sit-ups, a vertical jump, and an agility run.
Nice, yeah.
Nice.
The class is nearly 70% white, which is slightly less than Madison as a whole. Of the 23 recruits, 10 are female. Julie Clayton moved from Milwaukee to take the job. She says her family was surprised when she told them she wanted to become a cop.
They thought I was going to go into music. I played flute for a long while, and so that's how most of my friends and family knew me, and that's what I originally went to school for.
Now she's finishing up a degree in criminal justice. She says she wants to be an officer because she wants people to see the police as allies.
Because I had a lot of positive experiences, thankfully, and so I know of friends and others that haven't had positive experiences, and it makes me sad to think about that. And people are at their most vulnerable when the police are called, and to think that they're not being treated as such.
5 members of the class are over the age of 30. 17 of them have at least a bachelor's degree, including Jessica Gillette, who has a master's in peace and conflict studies. She says she considered the current tension between police and communities of color while she was going through the application process.
And so it really caused me to pause and reflect and say, is this something that I really want to do?
But she says her desire to see a shift in the profession motivated her to continue. She applied 3 times before she was finally accepted.
It's a trying and challenging time to get involved, but I think it's the most important time to get involved, especially for someone who's coming from a peace studies and conflict studies background as a peace practitioner, because that's really what we advocate in this department. And, you know, we're guardians of the community. We're not warriors. We're protectors.
At the end of the first week, the class spent 2 days at the Bethel Horizons ropes course near Dodgeville.
Go!
That's
ready. 1, 2,
30 seconds.
3,
go!
Go. 1.
The course was physically challenging. They rappelled off a cliff, jumped off a telephone pole, and climbed a rope ladder whose rungs were several feet apart. But to complete the challenges, the class had to work together and rely on each other. Recruit Ethan Pierick says by the end of the course, he felt he was part of a team.
And I just feel, I guess, a lot more excited, less nervousness and more excitement for the academy and to go through it. And it's been great seeing the class bond and get together. Doing the ropes course, even just, you know, in class. So I feel like we're already pretty close as a class, and I'm looking forward to continuing that.
In the coming weeks, the class will dig into law, ethics, and cultural competence. We'll have more stories along the way. Bridget Bowden, Wisconsin Public Radio.
We continue the conversation now about police recruiting. Some departments in Wisconsin and around the country are reporting difficulties finding enough new recruits to fill their open positions.
Joining us now to talk more about police recruiting when law enforcement is being scrutinized on the national stage more than ever before is Jim Palmer, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association. Jim, thanks for coming back to Central Time.
Well, thank you for having me on, Judith.
So what is your sense around the country of the challenges in recruiting enough new police officers?
Well, both across the country and in Wisconsin, it seems anecdotally very clear when I speak to officers and chiefs and sheriffs across the state and across the country that they are having a much more difficult time getting applicants to simply apply for the job of being a law enforcement officer. And in some cases, I was speaking to a chief this morning who said that his the number of applicants in just in the last 3 years has declined by more than 40%. And that's extraordinarily troubling and should be alarming to a lot of people.
In earlier times, was there more a sense of there were way more people who wanted to be police officers than could even be accepted?
Absolutely. And that's been the case for many years, that law enforcement was a very sought-after profession. Despite the fact that it is dangerous and does require a lot of training and education, certainly that has changed, and it's changed in a way that is troubling.
And so, what has changed? It's still a demanding job, but it was a demanding and challenging job when there was a lot of competition to become a police officer.
Well, I think clearly this is the most challenging era ever to confront law enforcement officers in this country. And there are a number of reasons why. I mean, certainly there are disparities in this country that have worsened. Whether it's due to truth in sentencing and some of our drug laws and enforcement laws. Obviously, a lot of those problems was not the cause of those. But also you have some interesting, dynamics in terms of how people interact with each other, the availability of information. I mean, when you think about the fact that, cell phones first, came on the scene in the United States in 2002, and by 2007, there were 2007 is when people could start, taking video. And, now you have over 300 million people in this country that use cell phones. I mean, that's incredible. You have over 270 million people who actively use Facebook each month. And they're using Facebook and Twitter. According to the Pew Research Center, more than 80% of the people use Facebook and Twitter for their news. And, they see a news headline that they like, that's the story that they read. So they can pick and choose. There's more selectivity than there was ever before. That's changed how I think the media reports stories. I mean, now it's about getting that story first. And because if you're not first and somebody else is beating you to it, they have a competitive advantage and they're going to have more viewers and readers and so forth. And so all these dynamics, I think, have come together to create a perfect storm that has really, I think, in some respects, conditioned a lot of people to think a certain way about law enforcement. And anytime they see the headline about a law enforcement officer's use of force, I mean, I think there is a growing skepticism about that, despite the fact that statistically it's really not supported. And I think that's important to note.
And so those are some of the external challenges. But looking critically within police departments, do you think there is also an element of perhaps police departments not responding to a changing landscape quickly enough to be able to make an attractive profession and to support those who are in the profession already?
I think clearly there, law enforcement generally does absolutely have some responsibility for the fact that the relationship that it has with the communities that it serves is not as strong as it should be. Ferguson was a good example in the sense that the diversity, the demographic makeup of that department was not representative of the community. And fortunately in Wisconsin it is better. In Madison, as you may well know, about 20% of the public, the city's population, is a racial or ethnic minority, and that's about the same for the police department. And so in many ways, Wisconsin's ahead of the curve, but nationally that's absolutely true. And that has helped really, I think, promulgate some of these negative media narratives that we've seen become so prevalent.
We're talking to Jim Palmer right now. He's executive director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association, and we're discussing getting more recruits onto the police force, and that amid highly publicized tensions between communities and law enforcement.
And we want to hear from you. Do you work in law enforcement? Do you feel like the high-profile stories in the media have affected you, the way you do your job, the way you think about your job? Maybe you've considered joining a police force recently. Have recent events made you lean one way or the other when you make that decision? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Also, let us know if you're a community member who works with law enforcement. Let us know if you've seen or want to see changes in the way police officers are trained. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or again, post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're picking up our conversation with Jim Palmer, executive director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association, about police departments facing a shortage of recruits.
And we want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. Has the focus on law enforcement and national media changed your perception of the police and whether or not you would want to join the force? If you are already in law enforcement, Tell us if you see training for police changing, if you think there are changes that need to be made, what your life is like after Ferguson, after a lot of the high-profile incidents we've seen. If you're a community member, talk to us about what you are thinking of the police in this difficult time between police departments and many communities around the country, what you like, what you would like to see change. Again, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
So, Jim, there were, again, some high-profile shootings in Charlotte, North Carolina, and also in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And you were recently part of a conference that met in the Wisconsin Dells to talk about how to handle an officer-involved shooting. And we are seeing some pretty different approaches, especially out of Tulsa, the police chief saying that he was really committed to, I believe he used the term, justice. And so what do you in your position recommend or suggest as resources for the police departments in Wisconsin?
Well, I was meeting with an association of training officers from across Wisconsin, and the idea or my goal was to really talk about, you know, what we've seen. Our organization represents more officers involved in these, you know, sensitive, critical situations than anyone else, and so we'd like to think we've, you know, garnered some experience and wisdom, hopefully, in all of that, and just to talk about what the officers have to think about and how they can, you know, look out for themselves and their own well-being, what the agencies can do in order to look out for the officer. And also, you know, the idea is it was a very holistic presentation in the sense that we want to make sure we care for the officer, but we also want to facilitate the officer's voluntary cooperation with the investigation, because that really is fundamentally important. It has to be transparent. The investigation has to be credible. And if none of those things are present, then I think, you know, that's how the public's trust suffers. And that's not something we want. And we have a good relationship with, I think law enforcement has a very good relationship with the state overall. And I think it's because we do some things like that are unique. Mm-hmm. And in other states, it's unusual, for example, for officers to voluntarily give a statement to, you know, criminal investigators of one of their shootings. And that's something that here in Wisconsin has become the regular course of business.
You have said in this interview and when we've spoken with you previously that the common occurrence of incidents being taped, say, on a cell phone, put up on social media, picked up by the media without as much context as maybe would be helpful, that can be very difficult for police officers and police departments. But do you see any positive aspect of that for the officers?
Well, I certainly hope so. I'm hoping that, you know, these situations, as controversial and as taxing as they are on so many people, including law enforcement officers, that we can really have a meaningful community-wide dialogue, not just in the city of Madison or mm-hmm. Wisconsin, but nationally, about the challenges that officers face. And also, I think it's important to talk about the challenges that minorities face in this country. We really have to have kind of a sentinel event type of review approach where it's not in kind of a non-blaming forum, but it's let's identify the problems and what we can do to get our arms around them. And right now, we're really not doing that. We're talking about these kind of sensational events that are based on, you know, piecemeal information. And that's, I think, destructive to where we need to go in terms of that dialogue.
And we've been talking about the need to find more new recruits. Is that solely because there are fewer people applying, or are officers leaving the force in greater numbers and so there's more space to be filled?
I think it's a little both, frankly. I think officers who are eligible to retire, I think there are quite a few of them that are retiring, even though they, you know, probably had intended on working a little bit later in their lives. And I think, you know, the level of scrutiny that is being applied to law enforcement officers across the country is extraordinary. And you can understand, what kind of prospect that would, make for somebody, a young person, you know, trying to decide what they're going to do for the rest of their life.
Let's invite some of our listeners to join the conversation. We'll go first to Dennis in Toma. Hi, Dennis. Dennis, can you turn your radio down? And we'd be happy to hear from you.
I just did.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Dennis, and I'm originally from Chicago. I've got cousins, I've got in-laws, all kinds of friends and family that are police and fire, and many of the ones that are older are taking early retirement, like you just said, but the other problem you run into down there is the education system for putting out people who could qualify for this test is woefully inadequate. Chicago regularly advertises to put people, to take the tests for the fire academy and the police academy, and upwards of 10,000-12,000 people will sign up for the test. But between the physical, the background check, and the test itself, usually 75% to 80% of the people who originally sign up are already eliminated before they ever get to the actual point of going to class and starting the training.
Thanks for that call, and I want to give Jim Palmer a chance to respond to that.
I've heard that same narrative play out many times in Wisconsin as well. And, here in Wisconsin, we've actually worked in conjunction with some other law enforcement groups, those that represent the chiefs and sheriffs, to actually elevate the training and certification standards. And because we want the best officers in the country, and I believe Wisconsin has those. We're fortunate in that way. But it's true that I'm hearing time and time again that, even those applicants that are entering the process, they don't make it very far and are often disqualified in the background check stage.
Thanks for that call. And let's go next to Nick in Greenfield. Hi, Nick.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. And I just wanted to say to this officer, the gentleman, two things. There was a officer one time who had the third shift, and one afternoon he rode through the neighborhood and he said, "I don't recognize the neighborhood." He says, "These are all different people. They're all nice and hardworking people." He says, "Not what I encounter at night give me a hard time." That's part one. My point is that the officers should probably live in the community so that they know better what's going on. And the second thing that I wanted to say, and that has to do with, say, like the incident in North Carolina, in the training, if an officer's not sure whether the guy is reaching for his gun or his driver's license, and he's not coming at him, then don't go immediately to deadly force.
That's a great point, Nick, and I want to make sure Jim can respond to that. So that is a question that comes up sometimes. There are certain jurisdictions that do require officers to live within some boundary, others that do not. Do you see pros and cons to that as far as feeling more connected to the communities that they're policing?
I see both pros and cons. I mean, certainly the pro could be that the officer might feel better connected to that assigned area, and that would help him communicate with the people that live there, and certainly there would be benefits to that. On the other hand, law enforcement officers do feel at risk when they're not working, in addition to feeling at risk when they are working. And there are times when law enforcement officers want to go home and simply be a father and be a mother and, to have some amount of anonymity that divorces them from their profession, especially when it is so highly scrutinized in this country. So it really is cut both ways. I know that the president's task force on 21st century policing explored this to an extent. I think it would be hard for officers, especially in areas that are lower income, high crime, and I think that would be they would be at greater risk, and that's something that we'll have to consider going forward.
Our caller also brought up the issue of not going so quickly to what ends up being deadly force in some of these very tragic situations for all involved. And we did hear in reporter Bridget Bowden's piece about de-escalation training. How does that fit into helping police officers have the skills and tools that I'm sure that they want to have as they're policing and encountering these very tense situations?
The de-escalation training is very prevalent in Wisconsin, is becoming more prevalent, fortunately, across the country. And it really does require officers to take in the totality of the circumstances and how to analyze them. And so that they don't make brash decisions. At the same time, there's a lot of research that shows that an officer's ability to react to an individual is slower. Even if an individual has, let's say, a gun at their side and their hands are all the way down, there's a lot of research that shows that individual can raise a gun and fire around before an officer can react, even if he's aiming at them. And that's that's science. And I think that's I really appreciate the question because it gives an opportunity for us to have that exchange. And I think we need to have more of it.
And Jim, as we get close to wrapping up, what are some of the approaches that Wisconsin police departments are taking to maybe reach out to people who would not normally see a career in law enforcement as a natural option for them?
Well, it's interesting. We see it here in Madison. We've seen billboards, and there are a number of communities around the state and around the country that are actually using, active public relations campaigns, commercials, to make people feel good about the law enforcement profession, and to let anyone who might be interested in the profession know that agency welcomes diversity, and that they can make an important contribution to the safety of that community.
Well, Jim, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Jim Palmer is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association. He joined us to talk about the falling number of police recruits amid increased scrutiny.